Welcome, everybody, to Talking Pioneering. I usually start these podcasts off by explaining what pioneering is, but if you've been joining us up to now, perhaps I don't need to do that. And I've got a great guest for you today, and I might get him to explain what he thinks it is, and you can check it against your understanding. So, with us today is the Reverend Andy Gray. Who is a multifaceted character who works closely with me in the diocesan offices, and it's a real privilege to have seen over time all the many sides to his character. Andy, welcome.
I'm waving.
You are waving. It's not a good medium for radio.
Know, that's why I had to say I'm waving.
Yeah.
I'm also looking over there, so I'm not looking you in the eyes.
Ah. We, yeah, how do you see yourself as a pioneer?
I would say that I am a kind of spiritual entrepreneur.
Wow.
That's how I would describe it.
Wow. Can you tell us more about what that means? How would I notice that?
Right, well, I kind of like discovered, I guess it must be about 20 years back that I was entrepreneurial because I started actually probably even before I was even 10 years old, I was financially entrepreneurial. I could get blood out of a stone, as my mum and dad used to say, or money out of them anyway. And then I kind of like just generated money for fun,
Wow.
and then as it's kind of like how this entrepreneurial, always getting ideas, maybe about 2 or 3 years before they suddenly blew up as good ideas, and I finally decided, let's make these good ideas happen.
Yes.
And they were never, I mean, we're not talking about millionaire or anything, just, you know, just I always seem to be ahead of the curve. And then through my work with youth and children's work in churches, it always seemed as though I was one step ahead. Someone described me and said, you know, you've got a train track. And the idea of a train on a train track.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, they're going to call me the engine driver. And he said, no. I said, are you going to call me the railway line layer? He said, no, you're the person way over the hill trying to work out where the railway line's going to
Wow.
go. And then, as it kind of like, the way I did my youth and children's work was far more about hanging around and seeing where they wanted to go next. So when you combine being an entrepreneur with that kind of prophetic announcing evangelism-y thing altogether, it started to create something that was interesting in the way that we did church. So one of the churches we ended up with, ended up in, which sort of like led to it all, in Scripture Union. So I was with Scripture Union, started a church, and we joined it when there were no children there at all. Hardly anybody. And we almost fell into it more than anything else.
And who's we?
Oh, sorry, me
Yeah.
and Mrs. Gray,
Yes.
and at the time a very, 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 very young Byron. So we ended up in the church, and long story short, we ended up planting a church in a church because there was nowhere else for it to go. And the minister went, oh, somebody said once that I plant a church within a church, and got very excited about it. So we grew in the space of 5 years
What does
from,
planting a church within a
oh,
church
planting a
mean?
church within a church. It was kind of, we'd established, working with, it came about that we had to start something for my son who was too big for the non-existent creche.
Right.
I was basically fed up sitting in a little room playing with toys with him while the church was going on. And we wanted something that looked slightly more what we were used to, being youth and children's work and Scripture Union primary school specialist, as I was. So we spoke to the minister and said, you know that lovely porta cabin we've got? Can we start church in that? And he said, yes, what do you want to do? And I said, well, contact all the people who've done Alpha Course over the years and never ended up coming to church and say, we're starting something new for young people and children. And I said, the deal is this. We go out after a few minutes into the porta cabin. And when we're in the porta cabin, I will get everybody, even if they don't come to church, they will teach their own kids. Okay, we've got the materials, trust me. And I said, and if they want to come out, they can, or they can stay in church. It's up to them.
Yeah.
So he said, deal. Right. I've got nothing to lose.
Yes.
So he did that, and we rapidly grew from 10 children plus their parents to, I think it was 20 children. No, more than that, 30 children plus their parents, crammed into this small porter cabin. And we realised about 9 months later, when we had a barbecue just to celebrate, that we suddenly had 40 people, and this was, we could form a church out of that. So again, instead of saying, oh, well, this is what we're going to do for you, we got all of those people together, including the kids, and we had to meet one night, so we said, look, if you're allowed to stay up until 9 o'clock at night, you're allowed to come to the meeting and influence it. So we crammed into my lounge, I think there was about 20, 30 people managed to make it, so children and adults and all the rest of it, plus the vicar. I remember it clearly. I was told on numerous occasions to shut up, because I talked too much. And between them, they decided what a new church would look like. Wow. They decided,
yes,
from scratch,
yes,
what it should have in it and how we should do it and all the rest of it. And then we looked for somewhere to put it, and we couldn't find anywhere that was suitable. So we decided, just a mad idea of, let's use the church building because it's a resource that already exists.
Yes.
So arguably it could be called, seen as just, as I say just, that's the wrong word, but it could be seen as a fresh expression. But because it was starting from the people themselves, and they were shaping it and forming it, and the attitude was, as soon as a new person joins, they are an intrinsic part of what it looks like. And we help them to explore God with who he is.
Yes.
And we rapidly grew.
Wow.
So there we are. So basically, it's always staying in side contact with people. So that was my first real dabblings with spiritual entrepreneurship meets youth and children's style meets everything else.
Yes.
And we had a very successful kind of thing. It was grateful.
Yeah. So the spiritual entrepreneurship, it's not so much about making money, but it's about being a self-starter around things that are of the spirit.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, I don't mind telling people that even as a dog-coloured one, I get very uncomfortable in churches. I don't find sitting still in churches very easy. And I much prefer exploring and interacting and all that kind of thing. So it does create a different form of church.
Yes.
And as a lot of people who I'm in contact with, are educated in the kind of world where you don't sit in straight lines, but you explore together. That works really well for me.
Yes.
And seems to work really well for other people. So that's how it all kind of started.
Yes. Because creativity is a big part of who you are and how you interact with the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you want to say a bit more about that and how that adds to the spiritual entrepreneurship, if it does?
Does it? Yeah, I would say it does. My half my role is as faith sharing enabler for the diocese.
Yeah.
The other half of my world is I'm an illustrator.
Uh-huh.
And I tell people the difference between an artist and an illustrator. I mean, I can be an artist, so I can go inside and dwell and think and things come out and you go, ooh, and all musy and stuff. But as an illustrator, it's basically feed me information, feed me data, stories, ideas, images, and then I process it. And then having processed it, I just say, well, this is what I think it is, as an image or an idea. And people go, ooh, I haven't thought of it that way, just because of how I'm wired. So I'm really who I am.
Yeah.
So when it came down to some of the Pioneer Church that we led during my curacy and after my curacy, so we started in Pioneer and everything else, the way that worked is that somebody would let anybody have a go at leading or bringing a thought or whatever. And I didn't worry about me trying to prepare anything. They would kind of like almost present stories, bits and pieces. And then I would suddenly see a thread in there, a bit like an illustrator would do.
Yes.
And then I would turn it into an idea and give it to people.
Right.
And then they would fly with it. And then I'd let people explore it, and then I'd just nudge it in different directions. So not try and tell people what to do. More of a coach, should we say. Mm. So where have you got to? Where should we go next?
Mm.
And then they're exploring it.
Yes.
So that's kind of how that all influences.
Yes. Yeah, no, it does. And you were the person who created the Bible chat mats, weren't you? Which in and of itself is quite a pioneering thing. It was taken up by the Church of England and lots of other dioceses. And
it's got a bit worldwide, I hear, as well.
Yes, and might be one of the ways in which you've most influenced the church. It's a very small thing, and yet it's had a really big impact. So tell people about the Bible chat mats, because they might not have seen them.
Okay, right. Bible chat mats. I think it's... So what happened was our Go team, Joe Govier, first of all, got in touch with me and said, Andy, what do you think about this idea? And it was actually just in my diocesan role that she was asking. The idea of being able to talk about the Bible and pass on faith.
Mm.
And at that point, it was sort of like a text document, so we just sort of like fed back, and then I went for a little bit of a chat properly with them. And then as we were doing it, I said, well, you probably need this illustrating. So I wasn't pitching for the job, I was just sort of like talking around it, and said, I can see this as the kind of graffiti style.
Mm.
And they said, oh, that sounds exciting, let's work on it together. So really, it was the Go Team's idea.
Well, it sounds like an idea that grew in conversation.
And it grew in conversation, yeah. And then what I did was I took the stories. So once they'd again fed me the small ideas. I then took the stories to create what is basically doodle art.
Yeah.
But it also could be seen by others as mindful colouring.
Mm.
It's got find 10 things on it, so even little ones can really get involved. But as you're finding the things, you're seeing the story that's being told in there.
Mm. So it's like an A4 sheet, isn't it, with pen and ink drawing of a Bible story, which...
A Bible story,
and the first ones were about Jesus, weren't they? Jesus the healer, Jesus the teacher.
Trying to remember. Yes, I think pretty much. Yeah, they were those stories.
And
yes,
there was a bit of a Where's Wally effect as well, wasn't there? In that there were things to find in
there.
But the kids could colour them in.
The kids could colour them in, but also it went further as well. So I baked into many of them, not all of them, because some of them would be impossible.
Mm.
Because I am a trained minister as well. I mean, if we handle the Bible, we're all theologians.
Yes.
And but I baked into there theological ideas and deep ideas. So if you look at the one with breakfast on the beach, and Jesus is there, you know, all the fish are there and all the rest of it. And the theology behind it is it's actually about telling the world about Jesus.
Mm.
So if you look deep in there, you'll find things like there's a globe in there and people around the globe, and there's... there's a little cross and a heart, and one little character telling another little character that. Mm. So there's all of these other things, and the idea is if you get the Bible chat mat, look at it and say, is there anything that doesn't seem to belong in the story?
Yes.
Because everything is there on purpose.
Yes.
And look at that thing and think, why is that thing there? Mm. And then talk about it.
Mm.
And even as adults, you can talk about it and go, why is that there?
Mm.
And then you imagine... Yes. Why it might be there. It doesn't matter if you get my idea or not.
No.
It just helps you have a place to talk from.
Yes. So again, it's sort of opening up conversation, isn't it? Yeah. And wondering and imagination. Yeah.
That's what it is. So there's a verse in there, so you can even learn the verses. I'm a big proponent of saying learn Bible verses. That are really important.
Yes.
So Bible verse in there. There's the passage to read from the Bible. So it's not just the picture you're reading from the Bible. there's things to consider, there's a prayer to say as well.
Yes.
So all those things are all baked into it. And you can even add your own little bits in it in some of them.
Yes, and you could actually laminate them afterwards and then they could be like a table mat, couldn't they? That's partly how they look like. Like something you could
The conception of them was kind of like the colouring sheets you get in Pizza Hut.
Yes.
So the idea, other pizza places are available.
Yes.
they're not sponsored by. So you kind of like would have, you'd be given the colouring sheet in Pizza Hut to colour while you're waiting for the meal to arrive.
Yeah.
So that was the original concept of it. It's grown all by itself into something other. It gets used in a lot of schools as well, apparently, and the schools get excited. And,
So one of the things that has intrigued me as I've got to know more and more pioneers is the way that a person's personality influences how they engage, how they practice their pioneering. Mm-hmm. So it's partly about context and it's partly about theology, partly about personality. And I think over the last couple of years, you've been coming to understand that you have a diagnosis of Asperger's.
Yes.
Yes, and you're open about that, aren't you? You did a programme on them. You did Songs of Praise with the BBC with a group of other people who had autism or somewhere on the spectrum. So how do you... I mean, it seems to me, working with you, it seems as if your brain's incredibly versatile and produces unexpected outputs sometimes are, you know, new things to give to the world. And how do you see it? Is having Asperger's part of your pioneering, or is it just part of who you are? Or
funnily enough, as I've got to explore it with in other contexts and places and with people, it seems that there's an awful lot of people who are entrepreneurs who are also autistic.
Right.
It's absolutely fascinating to see, and I think it's part of it. From the way that I can understand how the two influence together, the thing about an autistic brain is it doesn't filter very well. So everything is, if you imagine going into a coffee shop and you're having a conversation with somebody, then you can probably filter out all of those background sounds and hear the other person really clearly. For years, I was having to lip read people, even though I'm not deaf. And I was thinking, why am I able to lip read people? And if I wasn't lip reading, I couldn't hear them. And it's because you can't filter out the volumes. So I think what's actually happening with an entrepreneur, first of all, is that you're pulling in, I express it as pulling in all the data, so everything else. And then the other thing that an autistic brain does is it looks for patterns in everything.
Yeah.
Very sensitive to patterns. And then it said, oh, let's now obsess about those patterns and just sort of like do that.
Yes.
So it's very much an intuitive kind of thing. And I think that's why entrepreneurs do it. And it seems, I think there is a prophetic nature about even an entrepreneur who maybe isn't Christian. But I think with God and his spirit, something gets shined up even more into having the God element to it as well. So we're all working together. So God works with who we are. And I think when we're talking about pioneering, perhaps we are super sensitive to seeing where God's at work because we start to see the patterns maybe really clearly. And then we sort of like dive in on that direction.
Yes.
So I think that that's possibly where it works. Also, like I said, I don't find sitting in church very easy.
Yes.
Now that's not all the cases, because some of the autistic pastors I've come across and ministers, they like church because it can be very formal and very organised. So it depends really on the rest of your personality. It's not all one shape fits all. But certainly for those who are more on the entrepreneurial side of things, sitting in church doesn't work. So you start looking for other ways of expressing spirituality.
Yes.
So my obsession is Jesus, my wife, and drawing. which is crazy.
Three obsessions.
Well, they're my main obsessions. And so I can't go very long without talking about Jesus to somebody.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Which is very good, given that. So you're now paid to do that, and paid to help other people to do that. So being a faith sharing enabler for the diocese. your role is to enable other people to talk about Jesus. And you were attracted, weren't you, by the strap line, the telling the story?
Well, that was crazy because I'd already, as an illustrator, one of the things I have recognised, hopefully this will be all right for the podcast, is that by the time I retire, so my retirement age should be 70 at the moment, which is 20 years away, roughly. Mm-hmm. Give it another 20 years, retirement age will be raised to 75, which will be 25 years away. And in 25 years' time, I'm not sure quite how well we're going to be doing financially as the Church of England. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that if I was going to be able to continue doing the telling people about Jesus, then I was going to need to be self-supported. It was just a fact. And I couldn't always be a youth worker.
Yes.
As I explored this with my last diocese, they encouraged me to explore the sort of the art side, the illustration side. It's where I felt like God was directing me.
Yes.
I forgot where we were going. Where were we going with that?
You're going to tell me about how illustrating is supporting your current role, I think, in talking about Jesus, your two, and living the story and telling the story.
Oh, that was it, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Thank you. Right, okay. Yeah. So, as they encouraged me, I at first wanted to just be an artist, and then I asked a gentleman who was already a millionaire, so he asked the people who've made it, not an artist, he was in business, and I said, how do you make money? And he said, stop worrying about making money, work out how you serve, and the finances will follow.
Yes.
So I prayed about it a lot.
Yes.
And then it was one moment, I remember very clearly, it suddenly struck me, I help people tell their stories.
Yeah.
That's what I do. So as an illustrator, so for 18 months I was working happily, starting to illustrate more and more things for people and helping them tell their stories, which is great. And then the finances, because it was a limited contract, the role of Pioneer Minister was coming to an end, we had to find somewhere else. And so we were trying all sorts of different ideas, nothing was really landing. And then my wife said to me, I've just found this role, and it says in it, helping people tell their stories. And it was like, that's interesting, that's not far off. It was actually, I think, helping people tell their faith stories was the original tag. And I thought, that's so close, I've got to give it a go. And so that's why I applied for the role.
Great. And so now you're the faith-sharing enabler, and just tell people, because evangelism, actually sharing the good news of Jesus, is part and parcel of what pioneers do. So we're sometimes known as people who create new ways of being church, but on the way you have to engage people with the gospel, and you can do that by building trusting relationships and loving and serving and doing all those kinds of things. But sooner or later you have to say something about what motivates you and why you're there, and the God person who's taken hold of your life in this vibrant way. So so that's why we kind of work in the same team in the diocese and complement each other's work. So tell the listeners how they can access what you offer at the moment in your role in the diocese.
You can either go to the website and search for Andy Gray, spelled G-R-A-Y, just to help. Or you can go into Google and you can type in Bath Wells Talking Jesus.
Right.
And it'll take you to the right page.
Wow.
It should be the top result if you put in the words Bath Wells Talking Jesus. If you put Talking Jesus in, we'll be somewhere on the first page.
And what is Talking Jesus?
Right, so Talking Jesus is the main training offer that we're doing. So it's a course which is written by, I think it's the Hope Organisation, supported by Church of England and the Catholic Church and the URCs and the Methodists. So lots of people are really supportive of it. When he was Archbishop, Archbishop Centimu, he was well behind it as well. People really supportive. And the difference between Talking Jesus as a course and other courses that are available is that it helps people get the heads round the courage side of things. Once you've got courage to know that you can talk about Jesus and that people aren't going to react negatively, then it actually becomes an easier proposition.
Yes.
It's much easier to say something, to look out for the opportunities, to live your life of faith out there, and for people to ask a question and say, why are you like this?
Yes.
I remember when I was 16, happened to me first. Actually, when I was 17, slowly drifted away from God a little bit. Not a lot, just a little. It's like a magician. And then it was one day I suddenly realised that I'd drifted from God, and he didn't feel quite as present as he did. And I went home that night and basically broke down. Parents went out and I just broke down with God, saying, that's it, I'm not going to say, not going to be so sad anymore. Sorry, Lord, I didn't mean to. Right, okay, right, back on the straight lines, Lord. From now on, I will tell people about you. So this went on 16, 17. Next day I went into college. And I walked around with a stupid grin on my face. And one of the, I remember this this bloke yelling down the stairwell to me, Andy, why are you smiling so much? And I said, because I know Jesus. And he went, oh. and it's that kind of thing. And I found out ever since then that as long as you're living your life as you would see Jesus do, and you're wearing Jesus on your sleeve, people will ask questions as to why you're doing that or being like that. Or they might make a comment like, that's really kind, thank you so much. And you can simply say, well, you know, I'm a Christian. And I think that if Jesus was here, that's what he'd be doing. So that's why I did it. I'm not specifically kind.
Yes.
And they might go, oh, right. And they might go, oh. Or they might go, really? And it's all those kind of things. And if you're praying for opportunities, or you're praying for people in general, five people who don't know Jesus, it might take years and it might take minutes.
Yeah.
But the questions will come.
Yes.
And then all you've got to do is just have the courage to open your mouth. Oh, Lord, open thou our lips.
Yes.
And our mouth shall show forth thy praise. So stop thinking about talking Jesus as being a, ooh, I've got to say something, otherwise I'm a bad person or something. Instead, think about it that when you talk about Jesus, you're worshipping.
Yeah.
You're praising God. And as soon as you do that, it becomes actually quite fun to do.
Yeah. Great, thank you. So just before we finish, I think you were a pioneer as a curate on a housing estate, a new housing estate, and you used digital means to break into it. Is that right?
Oh, right, okay. I was pioneering one thing, and then we wanted to extend that onto a housing estate. Once I'd actually moved from being a curate, I stayed where I was and into the sort of like more regular role, for want of a better reason, explanation. So what we did was, there was a new housing estate being built, and the new instruction was to include that housing estate. Do something on the housing estate.
You were told to do something.
Told to do something. Yeah. And the bid had gone in and said, well, we're hoping to do this, this, this and this, but basically I got told to do something.
Yes.
It was, the housing estate was being completed just as my role part two, in other words, post-curacy, was kicking into touch. The difficulty was that we weren't living on the estate.
Yes.
We were just up the road from it.
Mm.
So that created challenges that you couldn't, you know, we couldn't really sort of like have coffee on our front lawn and all the rest of it. There wasn't really a lot of things we could do. There was no building we could access because it was all housing.
Yes.
And the developer had said they would put a community place on and didn't do it. And all there was a big rec ground, big recreation ground. And that was it. So what we did was we walked around it and we started with the great big idea of doing a garden party. on the rec grounds, mm. you know, sort of like tea and stuff, you know, sort of like a 1940s kind of style thing.
Yes.
And we're from Lancashire, it's called scones.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
The Queen calls it scones, so it must be scones. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a challenge of how do we do stuff on that estate. And then as I thought through, well, yes, well, we'll host this thing for them. One of my big things is get people involved. It's the heart of my ministry, and it always has been.
Mm.
Don't do things for people,
mm.
do things with people.
Mm.
Even when you're doing a Christian thing, as it were, I will do outreach with the people who I'm reaching out to.
Yes.
I won't just say, I'm going to come and do this for you and you can all be nice and just enjoy what I'm giving you. No, 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 we do it together.
Mm.
So it's helping people tell their stories. I'm alongside them.
Mm.
So garden party wasn't going to work because I was going to be giving them stuff.
Yeah.
So as we, I mean, it took probably a year to think what we were going to do because it had to be a really good kickoff.
Yes.
And it boiled down to, let's do a picnic. So I like to say that I'm very lazy as well.
Mm.
So I try to think, what's the smallest domino? So you ever seen the pictures on YouTube? You push a tiny domino and it pushes over a slightly bigger one, bigger one, until a huge one falls over.
Right.
That you could probably never have knocked over in the first place.
Okay.
So look for the smallest domino.
Yeah.
Smallest thing, biggest impact.
Yeah.
And it was going to be, right, these people, the one thing we've detected is that they're all strangers. They don't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to get them to know each other. Right. This is the big opportunity we have to bring people together and to start building into a cohesive group so that they can support one another and know each other because
mm-hmm.
they don't know each other next. Let's do this picnic. But we will mail shop the whole place. I will create a very quick website so that they can go onto a website which tells them a bit about me. So that will be an easy way for them to find the web address. And on there, there's going to be a clickable link to a Facebook group.
Mm.
So we set up a Facebook group as well, where people can then join and immediately get to know each other.
Mm.
We'll also put on that piece of paper, please tell your neighbours who might be, not be on the internet,
yeah.
who might not have seen this.
Yeah.
So we did that, and in an afternoon, we mail shot, I think it was 400 houses or something.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had my phone on me, I was getting pings for 2 hours solidly of people joining this group. The result was we had over 100 people come to the picnic itself. They also, this is awesome, please can we do it again? They started interacting on the group. The group became a neighbourhood supporty kind of group. Then we discovered that there were various different things that needed sorting out with the builders because the builders hadn't been quite fair in the way that they'd been dealing with people and was passing it, all the things you get on new housing estates.
Yeah.
So through that, we were able to help them create, I can't remember, neighbourhood council? What's the proper word for it? Do you know?
There are lots of different words. You're not thinking about neighbourhood watch, are you?
No, that's just
no,
it. That's
no.
not.
But I know what
yeah,
you mean.
You know,
it's like a community group.
Yeah, that's right. So that they could stand as one
yes.
when they were talking to the builders and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And the result of that is that they were able to do that just as we were leaving.
Yes.
And they'd formed this proper estate group.
Wonderful.
And we were able to, you know, we did Christmas carols
mm.
on the rec, and it was, we got people going there and sort of sending Facebook group notes. The funny thing was that it was pouring with rain. It was abysmal weather, and yet everybody still turned out.
Great.
And we were just sort of like singing. And I, of course, was able to talk about Jesus to everybody all at the same time, and they knew who I was, and I would drop things in. And,
yes.
Help people to build with the community.
Yeah.
Really exciting.
It sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Excellent. And helping people to help themselves. It's sort of being a community catalyst. In
oh,
that
yeah,
role,
yeah.
Like
that's the word that people describe me as. They describe me as a catalyst.
Catalyst. Yeah.
If anything goes with the entrepreneurial
yes.
kind of thing, it's got to be catalyst.
Yes.
And
before... Last thing, because there might be some people who are interested. I think when you were a curate, you set up a board games church.
Mm.
Can you talk about that in no more than 1 minute?
Yes, board games are awesome. We're not talking things like Monopoly. We're talking about modern board games. So look up on YouTube the Dice Tower, and right. It'll start giving you an idea where to go. But it creates a space where you can have longer conversations and get to know people.
Yes.
The result of that is that we built a lot of really good relationships with people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we talk about stuff. I'd say, oh, this great thing just happened recently with me with Jesus. It was awesome.
Mm.
And then they had to listen to me.
As they move their pieces around the board,
yeah. Because you've got to sometimes be 2 to 3 hours playing a game, some of these games.
Mm.
But it also is intergenerational.
Yes.
So people join through that. But then from that, some of those people started having other conversations with me in other spaces.
Yes.
Deeper ones,
presumably.
Yeah, deeper ones, yeah. And unfortunately, we left at just a point in time when I would have been looking to bring in more of a sort of like, how do we do a explore faith?
Yes.
It's been since then I've done a lot more exploring how can we use board games to be able to do that. So you'll find stuff on Scripture Union, a friend of mine, gamesforall.net, I think he's on, has done quite a bit of work on how you can use board games to explore faith.
Good. Well, you know, I really think we could keep talking and talking. We haven't touched on DJ or magician or many other things about your portfolio, but people will have to get in touch with you themselves to hear about those, I think, or follow you on Facebook. Andy Gray.
Yeah, if you look up Rev Andy Gray, all one word, I'll appear on Facebook.
Wow.
Rev Andy Gray. All one word with an A.
Excellent. So thank you everyone for listening. Andy runs groups of people with the gift of evangelism, and they're called Faith Sharing Firestarters. If you'd like to be part of one of those groups, or you think that you might be, then get in touch with andy.gray@bathwells.anglican.org. And he also runs Talking Jesus courses in deaneries and benefices and on Zoom, so you might be interested in finding out about those if you think that you or your congregation might need a little bit more courage in talking about what God offers you in your life and you'd like to share it with your friends. Other things to watch out for, I'm leading a course called Pioneering Parishes in October and November. You can find that on Eventbrite. It's both about how the church leadership team create the space for pioneering and how pioneers practice and how a fresh expression might take place. What else is there? Max's Boat sails once a month on the second Wednesday in the evening for an hour, and you can join that to hear pioneering stories. And we have an encourager of new Christian communities who will come alongside you to help think about fresh expressions of church, and you'll contact them on encouragerncc@bathwells.anglican.org. So lots of ways to pursue this pioneering journey. We are advertising now and recruiting for the CMS certificate, a year-long course to open minds, eyes and hearts to going out of the church and meeting people where they're at through the local culture. It's been life-changing for lots of people who've done the previous two cohorts. So if you'd like to know more about that, please email emma.bartlett.com. That's with two T's, emma.bartlett@bathwells.anglican.org. Every blessing. Bye for now.